Yeah, it's Wednesday. It's winter. But warm weather is coming. Just not anytime soon. But it is coming. 860-522-9842. We'll take more phone calls coming up. But Frank Farriker joins us this time every week. Former all kinds of things. What are you in the present, Frank?
What am I in the present?
Well, you're an anti-toll Democrat. That's one thing.
I'm an anti-toll Democrat, yes, and I do real estate development. And I also help operate a theater, a not-for-profit theater in Norwalk.
A live
Wall Street theater.
You're talking live people theater?
Live performance theater.
Yes. Oh, that's great.
Yep. Come on down, 701 Wall Street, Norwalk.
All right, so what's on your mind this week? Do you still have tolls on the brain, or is there something else on your mind?
I'm feeling a little coal in my stocking when it comes to tolls these days. I just I throw my hands up in abject disgust. We'll have a special session. Maybe we won't have a special session. Maybe we'll have a truck toll. Maybe we'll have a lawsuit.
You're not sweating it.
I'm not sweating.
You're waiting for the next move.
Waiting for the next move. No, actually, believe it or not, I'm somewhat fascinated by the impeachment hearings.
Well, so was I. It's the first day it caught my attention. Why did it catch yours?
I was a little bit confused as to the idea of bringing, I guess, what amount to both for the Republicans and the Democrats, the celebrity law professors. It seemed odd to me, you know. I felt that I was amazed that the one set of the Democratic law professors, I guess, forgot to scrub their record before they came in. A couple of them had been on record as looking to impeach back, in January of 2017. And
I didn't know that. That's great.
Yes. And Professor Turley, every time the Republicans would ask him a question that they were hoping for, but he would say things like, well, I believe the president is odious, and what he did is absolutely disgusting, but, and then the congressman would try to rush in and stop him from going on any further.
But it turned out to be an inspiring defense, not of the president, but of the Constitution and the notion of impeachment as something that is a threat to the country if it isn't used as intended, and that is in very rare moments in a very narrow scope. Did you hear that part of what he had to say?
I did, and I didn't find that terribly compelling.
You didn't?
I didn't because what I've gotten out of this is that I don't think anybody, regardless of what my Republican friends may say about it, I'm not going to find anybody who's really honestly going to put in a big defense that the perfect phone call with the president and President Zelensky was somehow a good thing, and to say that it was all about rooting out corruption, come on, it's not necessary. But it was a really good display of two points of view on whether that is an impeachable offense, and what would that mean if it was an impeachable offense, going back to what you were saying.
Yeah, so this is why I find it was powerful as well, because you had the two sides spelled out very clearly, and I thought I thought Turley was incredibly powerful because of his passion for doing what was right. So I felt like he brings us back to a time where we can think about what we thought maybe in naive times what politics was all about, actually pursuing what's right instead of just people looking to steal power and be as hyper partisan and malicious as they can be. And that's how I feel like he revealed this whole process to not in any way be sitting in a sofa of legitimacy in terms of legal process. It's simply politics, and well, go ahead.
I can buy that, but I also thought that he wasn't opining so much on the merits of the case. I think he was more stating things like, well, there's just not enough information out there right now.
That's the merits of the case. He says that they're rushing the case for political reasons. It's very flimsy right now. It would be the most superficial impeachment ever to happen, worse than Clinton's, he said.
I'm going to way disagree with him on that one. The Clinton one took less than 3 weeks when it was all said and done. So,
yeah, but he said there was more evidence there. There's no evidence here. And there's no reason why, if they actually care about what they claim to care about, that they wouldn't take more time, that this is way too fast, mm-hmm. and it needs to be done in a slow, more methodical way, and they need to get their evidence. They don't have their evidence.
So, what do you think about the fact that most of the evidence that they don't have could easily be presented by the president?
I will answer that question. This is good suspense. Coming up after we get Traffic and Weather together on the 8th, we're talking to Frank Farrakhan, who is an anti-toll Democrat, also the former commissioner of the State Lottery Commission. And fun to talk to because he's a really smart guy and he's honest. Most of the time, I would say. Well, okay, all the time. All the time. So is Mike Allen in the WTIC Traffic Center. Hi, Mike. 860-522-9842. We'll give away some Beach Boy tickets in a few minutes, but let's talk some more with Frank Farrakhan. So, Frank, you asked, did it concern me that some of the things Jonathan Turley was arguing that the hearing should be delayed for, the impeachment hearings, might mm-hmm. hurt the president? And I would say, no, this is what makes him compelling. He doesn't care what happens to the president. He cares about things being done properly. And that's right. Something we need more of. I have no problem with things being done properly and that accruing to the negative for the president. Look, the president knew that he was under scrutiny from before he even got elected, that they were thinking about impeaching him. And mm-hmm. and he did this whole thing on his own. He got himself in this trouble. So he can take care of himself. He's going to win at the end anyway.
Sure, but for example, the conversation with Zelensky, which is pretty much the
president of Ukraine,
this entire thing. Mm-hmm. There is an actual recording that the White House has. If everything was as he says, wouldn't it be in the president's best interests to present this phone call? The Democrats aren't going to act any different, but at least the public will know what took place in that call instead of a transcript with issues. And there are just so many other things in this that I think that if the president were either to let subordinates testify or if he were to turn over documents, even some of them that were asked for, you would think that that would go towards pure exoneration, if what you're saying is true.
Well, I don't know. It could go to exoneration. It could go the other way. I don't really care that much.
Okay.
I'm not worried about the president. He has one mode, and that is war. And when they escalate against him, he escalates back against them, or maybe he does it first in anticipation. And that's part of what makes him beautiful to me for this era, because our politics is so sleazy and so deceptive.
And that was what Robert E. Lee did. And while he had marvelous successes for 3 or 4 years of that particular war, he did ultimately lose. And I do think that that's ultimately what's going to happen to the president. It's just that I think that there is a limit to how much war you can make.
You mean how much war people can take?
Both.
Yeah. That may be. However, there's something interesting that is revealed in this politics, and that is when you're fighting a democratic system, this Republican form of government of ours, where power is split.
You're a small D Democrat, you're saying.
Yes.
Small D Democrat.
Yes. The power is split up, and power needs to be split up. As we can see right now, there is too much power in the presidency, and that makes him
I would agree with that 100%.
So that makes him too exciting a kill. And that's what we're seeing right now, is their desperate desire to destroy him, which, by the way, they were talking about on Election Day before any of this stuff happened. And this stuff is just the fodder they found to do it. And we've got to face up to the fact that the central government has become too powerful and too precious. And because the big thing of a king in my mind, Frank, and I'll just make this point and then shut up and let you talk. But the big thing about a king, and this is what I've noticed from watching all those BBC shows about the royal families, is that the guy who's cursed with being in the number one position in that system of government is under so much stress. Because everybody around him is trying to poison him or otherwise manipulate to take his power away from him. It's too focused onto that pinpoint of a single person. But now we can look at our system of government and say Washington is so big and sucks so much power out of the country as it was not intended to do that it's now become a dangerous place to hold power because that power is too focused on this one little guy named Donald Trump right now.
And it would be, you know, I do remember that in 2011, Barack Obama actually made an attempt to get the authorization for use of military force, that the thing, the ultra blanket that George Bush got in 2001 to essentially declare war on anybody. And Obama actually went to the Congress
to make the argument,
Republican Congress, that they should repeal that power from the president. And it was the Congress that said no, because Republican leaders were envisioning a period of time when they would be back in the presidency, and they didn't want to in advance dilute the extreme amounts of power that they could exercise when they were in office.
And that was a particularly sweet one because they would have the power but not the accountability.
That's right. And that ultimately, from a bipartisan standpoint, is something that I'll agree with you completely. There is just way too much power centralized in Washington, and it isn't going to turn out in anybody's best interest in the long
run. Maybe this is what I hadn't thought about in these terms, but maybe the fact that the presidency has become so powerful and that Washington has become so powerful, it's usurped so much authority that was supposed to be in the hands of the state, the states, and as a result, that it's unable to function just because of the stresses that all that power creates.
But it goes back to Connecticut. I think one of the biggest problems you have in Washington is similar to what we have in Connecticut, is that the issues, the totality of the issues that they need to deal with, the totality of the interrelated problems that have been created over the last X amount of years, find very little way to get out of them, to undo it. And it's, I know it's enticing to think that, you know, Donald Trump will go in there like a bull in a china shop and he'll just run over the garbage. I think it's appealing to think that that's the case, but A, I don't think he's doing that. But B, it's like, even if he does that, don't you think that the entrenched power structures that are there in case wouldn't let that really happen right now in that way?
Well, they are fighting back, and he certainly went after the toughest ones right off the bat. He took on the media and took on the intelligence agencies just as sort of an opening salvo in what power was going to be like for him. So it's no surprise that he's gotten war back, but that's him. Other people, however, and this is what's appealing about Trump, other people are happy to go to Washington and accept a position like being president and wear the suit and read the teleprompter and accept that nothing works and they have no real influence over policy, but they have a wonderful life and they're happy to live it.
So why does he support those 250-plus Republican senators and congressmen who live that very life? Why is he supportive of them but not supportive of but going to war with the Democrats who, by that rationalization, are pretty much identical?
Well,
that his guys are better than my guys.
His guys are better if they're doing what he wants, and then he goes to war with them if they don't do what he wants. He's demonstrated his willingness to lash out at people on his own side.
I'm not so happy about that. I don't like the guy anyway.
Yeah, well, that's fine. There's no reason we have to like the president. That's another lesson.
I worked with him at one time about 15 years ago. It was an interesting experience.
Oh, you'll have to fill us in someday.
I will. Be happy to.
Frank Farriker, anti-Toll Democrat and anti-Trump Democrat. Thank you, sir.
There you go.
We'll talk to you again next week. And that's always fun, isn't it? I like those conversations.